Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people,
aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show.
Happy New Year, everyone. We are recording just before the holidays. I'm pretty sure this will be our first episode of the new year. And what better way to enter 2024 than a traveling back to 1999, season two of Sex and the City. We are talking episode 15. It's called Shortcomings. This is the one where Carrie dates a short story writer with a premature ejaculation problem, but she just likes his family so much, while Miranda dates a divorced dad and Samantha sleeps with Charlotte's brother. And speaking of celebrated writers, I am joined by two of them today. And unlike Carrie's boyfriend, they're both famously great in bed. First one is an actor, writer, and producer who has worked on iCarly and New Girl and Broad City and much more. And he's one of the hosts of the podcast, You're Making It Worse, Elliot Glazer. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Thank you for being here. And we are also joined by the chief critic at Vanity Fair, the host of the podcast Little Gold Men and Still Watching, and the author of the novel All We Can Do Is Wait, Richard Lawson. Good day to you, sir.
Hello. I've got my lox and bagels and everything. I'm ready to go.
He's ready to go. Well, Richard, let's start with you. How would you describe your overall relationship to Sex and the City?
Long, enduring, and intense. It's so much so that in June of 2024, I will be the moderator of a 90-minute panel with a Sex and the City writer and costume designer on a boat in the middle of the Aegean Sea on a Virgin cruise.
What?
Yeah.
are tickets available for the
Oh, they are still for sale. The whole cruise is not Sex and the City themed. It's just part of a little package you can get, I'm told. But I did a podcast at work about And Just Like That, and this travel agent person had listened to it and so reached out. So yes, going 25 years now, it's finally paying off for me. I got to do this podcast and then I get to go to Greece.
That's amazing. It does feel short-sighted of them to not have turned this into a full Sex and the City cruise.
Yeah,
maybe
seriously.
That's my next venture, but that's very exciting. Elliot, how about for you? So you're the one who chose this episode to talk about today, and we'll go through it beat by beat, but just like big picture, what is it about this one that captures the spirit of Sex and the City, whatever that means to you?
It's the one I remember the most, basically. Unfortunately, that's my best answer. It's the one I remember best because it was the closest episode to like something actually culturally Jewish in the entire span of the entire series, which I thought was really strange for a show about New York.
Right. Okay, well, we'll talk about that as we get to it. Before we do, Richard, you also did a podcast about And Just Like That. Can you give us like sort of your top line take on the show, that iteration of the series?
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting show in that it's been an interesting show so far in that like the first season feels like it's all throat clearing. It's like, we got to deal with like the fact that Carrie's married. And so we got to get rid of that situation. And then we have to have, well, but then her husband died. So she has to grieve for a number of episodes. And, you know, Miranda has to go through this crucible of horror. So I feel like the second season is really where the show became the intended show in a way, or at least the show that I think fans wanted. And I enjoyed it a lot more because of that. I really got to know the new additions better. And I think I really kind of warmed to those performances. And I still, the fundamental thing I think that will forever ding the show in my mind is that they don't do the episodic themed episodes like the original did. I miss that format a great deal, but viewed as an entirely separate species, I think, and Just Like That is plenty good.
Agreed. Did you watch it all, Elliot?
I did. I watched the first season and was like, is this CGI? Like, what am I, is this AI? Like, it seemed like AI that was like programmed to say podcast in every episode. Like, I've never heard people talk so much about podcasts, but then I totally agree with Richard. The second season seemed like storytelling and like more real people. And like, finally, just like, let Miranda just be like queer as fuck. Cause this has just been in the making for a long time. I mean, even watching the episode that we watched, I was like, this ain't right. This ain't right.
It does color this episode a lot. The knowledge of what she'll be like in 20 something years, where it's like, oh, that's why this never worked.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Totally. Well, let's get into it, because, you know, we open on Miranda on the like incline bench press at New York Sports Club. And this is the second episode recently where Miranda's whole storyline kind of like kicks off in the gym. There's also the one where she dates the guy from Crunch and she can't believe somebody so hot would be into her or whatever. But I love the idea of like Miranda as a gym rat, because it really captures her as like the like harried New Yorker on the hamster wheel of life. You know, like she doesn't love it, but this is what we do in the big city. And, you know, it kicks off her story with the divorced dad. So talk to me about your general vibrations around Miranda in this episode.
I feel like she goes to the gym not for necessarily aesthetic reasons, but she just is like, I don't want to have a heart attack. Like, she's like neurotic about something involving her health. That's how I've reasoned it out. But yeah, you know, it's funny. I turned 40 this year and I was like, oh, how old is Cynthia Nixon in this episode? And I was like, she's 33. I'm older than Miranda Hobbs. Oh my God. So it's kind of fun now to, I hadn't watched this episode in a long time, to be like, wow, Miranda is just kind of a kid almost in this, except she's still the most mature of the four.
It's also so interesting too, how in this episode, you know, her story begins and ends at the gym, but it's like a regular gym. And then you think about And Just Like That, and essentially how the evolution of fitness, quote unquote, or working out has become such a social animal itself in New York, where there's episodes that are about like Peloton and spin and like all these trends, and how it sort of engulfed the city and I guess like the culture in the way that like Miranda then is literally like wearing a towel around her neck at New York Sports Club. And now it's like, I don't remember what exactly happened in And Just Like That, but I feel like there were some intense scenes in like a spin class or something.
Yeah. Well, big, of course, died on the Peloton.
Oh, that's a Peloton, right?
Died doing what he loved.
But I think you're right, Elliot, in that like in 1999, it was like urban and sophisticated and exotic enough that she went to a gym at all, you know?
Yes, that's
like,
right.
Because
yes,
you would think of a gym as like, oh, it's just like muscle guys or whatever, you know?
Right.
And women like do little home exercises or maybe go jogging, you know? But like the sort of like harried Manhattan life of like, you just go to this place and work hard for an hour and that's your day. Like, this was like Anthropology back then, I think.
Folks, sunnier days are a-comin'. Summer's right around the corner. We're all on our wellness journeys, and I can think of no better way to kickstart your new healthy routine than with Factor Meals. And right now, if you go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use our code likematt50, you'll get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription's active. So with Factor Meals, there are 35 different meal options, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you've always got new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert, everything in between. You'll stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. I'm talking filet mignon. I'm talking shrimp. I'm talking blackened salmon. And Factor Meals are ready in 2 minutes, so no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. Head to factormeals.com right now. Go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use code likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code likematt50 at factormeals.com/likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. You know, one of the many, many things I have in common with our Lord and Savior Oprah Winfrey is that I love bread. I do. I love it. It's my favorite thing. When they drop that basket on the table at a restaurant, I light up, I dive in, and then I go, oh no, don't have too many. What am I going to do? Because the carb fear can be very real. But luckily, Hero Bread is here with those same delicious favorites, but free of consequences or compromises, because they have remade carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT, you'll get 10% off your order. So whether your health goals are getting enough fiber or cutting down on sugar or adding more protein, or you want to find a way to make a delicious French toast or a breakfast sandwich that still fits in with those goals, it's all about the Hero Bread. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your first order. Go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT at checkout. That's LIKEMATT at hero.co. Because you can have your bread and eat it too.
So Miranda's dating the divorced dad, and you know, meanwhile, Carrie is dating the former Mr. Jennifer Aniston, Justin Theroux, you know, famously plays more than one character in the show. And this time around, he is Vaughn, the short story writer, has the premature ejaculation problem. Carrie doesn't want to dump him. She's too attached to his family. You know, revisiting this part of it shook me for a couple of reasons, but I want to hear from you, Elliot, how your feelings about the depiction of this family.
I mean, the reason that I remembered the episode so well is because the show, for better or worse, in total, and I never rewatched it. I sort of watched it once, just caught up on it, sort of, I think, before the series finale, all like on like DVD, basically, and but I remembered there being like so little Jewishness to it until Charlotte married Harry. Mm-hmm. And he was like obviously written as culturally Jewish, but even that was a little shticky. And I just found it so interesting that the show Red is so like predominantly WASPy. And so it felt like, at least for me, I could remember this one small breakthrough being Valerie Harper and this like, you know, family in a townhouse, and there's food, and there's always eating, and there's, you know, the moment somebody mentions cream cheese, I'm like, you know, like it's like there they are, and so, and you know, I can say I'm Jewish, so I recognize that, you know, the cultural like language of it all. So ultimately, that's what sort of broke through the veneer of the episode for me, was remembering that element, and ultimately, does Justin Theroux play, like, does he do well as like a sort of nebbishy pre-ejaculator? I guess so. I mean, I get, you know, the biggest, like the most striking thing for me was being like, he really like the receding hairline was like so prominent. And I don't remember if that was like a look, if that was a choice. Like, it's just so noticeable that I'm like, was that just like a hot thing? I mean, he's obviously super hot. So I don't know if that was like part of the look or if that was purposely, like if we were supposed to see it, because it just like, it was so, I don't know, striking and noticeable.
Yeah. And I don't know that I noticed it as much now. I'm not implying anything about,
I just don't see haircuts like that. Done,
but, right. Yeah. Where it was really like accentuating it.
It's not too far from a Dracula haircut. I mean, it's extreme widow's peak.
Extreme.
That's right. But I don't hate it as a look. By the way,
no.
I would be very terrified to Google how old Justin Theroux was when he shot this episode.
Yeah, don't do that. Yes. I wouldn't do that.
I don't. Oh, by the way, we just talked about another episode where Miranda actually says 43 is her scary age, which is my current age.
Whoa.
That's really hard. That was hard. And for both of you, in your own lives, let's just talk about how this might be, I don't know, some of these themes might show up for you. Like, Richard, what is your rule of thumb when it comes to, you know, mixing romantic relationships with family?
It's really
it sounds like I'm asking if you date people you're related to. That's you know what I mean.
No, it's really only something I've had to deal with recently in my life. I'm in my first like real long-term relationship 5 years now, and you know, his family lives a lot closer to us than my parents do. So like I go to Long Island a lot and it's
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It's lovely. It's fine. You know, and I get along with everyone, you know, especially his sister, but I love what this episode does in terms of setting up this, oh, the breakup has to be between me and this fabulous woman I met and not her kind of annoying son. But I think the episode could maybe go a little bit into, I know they only had 20 something minutes to do it, but like she did raise that kind of annoying son. And so yes. Is he just totally rebelling against his amazing progressive mother, or did some of that, like we share everything in this house, kind of stunt him somehow? So I love the Valerie Harper character so much, as does Carrie, but I also, there's a kind of little whisper of doubt in my head about like what actually that family's like when they don't have company over.
Right. One of my friends who I wrote with on New Girl calls characters like Vaughn Joshies because it's sort of this like, the language is essentially like the, I forget who played him. Oh, one of the Duplass, Jay Duplass, the character on Transparent is named Josh, but his domineering Jewish mother calls him Joshy. Mm-hmm. And it's just a constant, like, you know, emasculation by through love. And I feel like I think that's what you're talking about, Richard, in this character. It's just like, he is just, you know, emasculated and tantruming in every way. And it's just such a Joshy energy, and it's so unattractive. But like, who wouldn't want to, you know, essentially have a platonic relationship with Valerie Harper?
Yeah. Right, right. But there is something I could see long term smothering about the way she's like, come on, like cajoling people to talk about things in public. Like there's a I know women like that in the real world who are great and friendly and gregarious, but also they're kind of exhausting at the same time. And you do wonder if maybe Carrie might have had to put some distance between her and the mom at some point in the future.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me is, you know, the mystery of Carrie's own family of origin is just like this open-ended thing. And it's one of the rules, enduring rules of like the Sex and the City universe. So much that Michael Patrick King, my best friend, gets annoyed when I try to like ask questions about it, because he does. It's like that is not meant to be addressed ever. That's not supposed to. That's not going to be a thing in season three. Even just like that, we're like, oh wow, we finally meet Carrie's mom. Like she's always meant to be this kind of like orphan, basically. But this was, I mean, a lot of people point out Samantha always has like kind of a maternal vibe with Carrie, but like this was one of the times that you really feel Carrie being attached to a mother.
Yeah. Are we declaring then the Carrie Diaries not canon?
I believe we're not. Yeah. What is the deal with her parents and Carrie?
Her mother is dead in that. And she has a dad who is a major character on the show. But I like that show. It was a cute little show starring a young Austin Butler.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but I think I'm safe. I'm happy enough to put the Carrie Diaries in a different sort of, it's non-canon, it doesn't count, because I love, it's vexing in a way, but I do sort of love that Carrie is a little bit placeless. We don't really know where she's from or like who her family is. I think that really works for that character. Whereas I like, you know, we've heard about, you know, in this episode, Charlotte's brother, or another great episode, Miranda's mom and stuff. So, but I think Carrie remaining a mystery is good.
I do too. And the other thing that really resonated with me, this Carrie story, was that I had a relationship where in retrospect, I realized that my real attachment was not to the guy, but to the family. Like oh, the wow. Real painful separation, I mean, I was close to all of them, but it was like, oh my God, his sister's not going to be in my life now. And we did try briefly, but it was kind of one of those things where I was like, you know, if we're going to be friends, I have to be able to talk about your brother being a sociopath. Is that okay? Not okay. Okay, got it. So it was, you know, was not meant to be. Have a healthy.
It's not too indifferent from. It's not too indifferent from being in a relationship with somebody and then having to divorce, lose those friends in the process, and that just sucks when you really like their friends, but they belong to them, you know.
Yeah.
And then you might agonize over like, are they talking about me? Do those people now dislike me because they kind of have to? You know.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Like, I could imagine the Valerie Harper character in a couple of weeks being like, well, Carrie, she's kind of overrated or something, you know? Like,
yeah, 100%. But I wouldn't mind seeing Vaughn come back in and just like that. You know, he might have gotten the help he needs.
Yeah.
Is Valerie Harper still with us? I'm sorry, I don't know.
No, she's no longer with us.
I recently on here was like, where's Magda? Why isn't Magda on the show? Actress Lynn Cohen is no longer with us. I'm ashamed I didn't know that. By the way, just other thing worth noting in the first scene, Carrie tells him never be photographed in anything sleeveless, which is so ironic because like Justin Theroux literally never wears sleeves in photos to this day and looks great. And nor should he, you know,
that line in the show radicalized him as a young man. He said, I reject this.
So we also meet Charlotte's brother, Wesley, and he's going through a divorce. Charlotte is upset when Samantha sleeps with him. I'm assuming we're all team Samantha in this conflict. No?
Age has essentially like lost all meaning through time, but also through the lens of Sex and the City. But he seems like he's like 25 years older than Charlotte, right? Like his his vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't have a sibling dynamic
at all. No. It's so like disjointed and weird.
If anything, the dynamic is like, there's a vibe between them that I'm like, wait, what? Are they right. Biological siblings? Like, I am team Samantha on this, but at the same time, we're two seasons in. These are four best friends. Like, Samantha should know that Charlotte, of all the gals, is going to freak out about this, especially if she's like in her underwear, in her brother's shirt, like just making coffee or whatever. You know, like there was maybe some tact that could have been employed. Like he could have gone back to Samantha's house versus doing it at Charlotte's. But no, otherwise, yes, team Samantha.
Well, while we're in Kim Cattrall territory, I don't know if you know this, this is largely just a Kim Cattrall protest podcast. Just sort of demanding her return to And Just Like That. But we have a listener voicemail. I think this is maybe Kim Cattrall / And Just Like That related, if I remember correctly. So let's bring that into the conversation.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my voice memo. I come to you through Bitch Sesh. I'm always a big fan of yours when you come on as a guest. So was very excited when you launched a podcast about one of my favorite shows of all time, Sex and the City, and now And Just Like That. My thought for you today might be a little bit of a hot take. I want to talk about Samantha and the Kim Cattrall of it all and the idea of her coming back. So I personally actually really liked the way that they handled her not being on the show. I liked that she was still alive and with us, but that there was a conflict and they were no longer friends. And then we would see kind of these little breadcrumbs throughout the first season of, you know, whether it's text messages or flowers. I thought that that was really great because, you know, it obviously parallels what's going on in real life. So that's, I guess, where my question lies. Since the conflict has been so public between Kim Cattrall and the others, and really Kim Cattrall being so adamant about her dislike of SJP, I'm wondering if you would have a hard time disassociating that reality of their relationship and their feelings for each other and be able to view all of them back together in the same way with the same chemistry. Let's be honest, Kim Cattrall is not that great of an actress, so I'm not even convinced that she'd be able to fake the chemistry at this point. But all that to say, you know, is there any concern that you have that if you got your wish and she came back as Samantha and there was some sort of resolution, that you would have a hard time buying it, knowing everything that you know about, you know, their real life conflict? Thanks so much.
We talked recently about that episode where Carrie doesn't have enough money to buy her apartment and Charlotte eventually gives her her engagement ring to help her get the money. That one always strikes a nerve because it's such a relatable topic because sometimes that paycheck just doesn't seem to come quick enough. But look, life doesn't happen biweekly, so why should payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin.
EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the EarnIn app, you verify your paycheck, then you access up to $100 a day as you work, leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I know I've got my husband's birthday coming up. I want to give him a nice gift. He's a man who likes the nicer things in life. So that's certainly how I would use the extra money I'd get from EarnIn. Download EarnIn today. It's EARNIN in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in Just Like Matt under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. That's Just Like Matt under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Powerful question. Thank you. Guys, what do you think?
I think it's a great question. I think we won't know until we see it. That's the problem. I think Cattrall is a good actor. I really liked her on that show she was just on Netflix that I'm forgetting the name of, where she played a sort of
Glamorous.
Yes, Glamorous. Thank you. I thought she was fun on that. I think that they were having problems during the filming of the original show and certainly the movies. And I didn't really know much about that then, and I didn't detect anything. So I think they could pull it off. I think the question is, will David Zaslav be able to write a big enough check to make that happen? And I think it's going to have to be a like novelty sized, you know, Publishers Clearinghouse style size check.
Yeah. Elliot, what do you think?
I don't know. I don't necessarily think she's a good actress. I think she's sort of, you're sort of like, the line between Kim Cattrall and Samantha Jones is pretty blurry. And at this point, I feel like I don't know how, you know, how broad the like off camera fighting is to like the general audience. I really don't know. I would have no idea, but ultimately I do think it would be, it's unless you know and can appreciate the meta narrative, I don't know what, how much payoff you'd get from not seeing her like on the actual show. But again, I'm like on Just Like That, everything has moved into a little bit more of a realistic place, but I still had watched it and was just like, is this on in New York or are we on Mars? Like, I can't get a, like a, I can't get like a, I can't get my feet on the ground watching this. So honestly, it's all up in the air to me.
You mean when Carrie moved into temporarily to that ultra modern like apartment on the river that was like this weird CGI moon landing?
It's not like where are we? What planet are we on?
That was fully in that Las Vegas thing, the sphere or whatever that thing is called.
Yeah.
I also think the problem with Cattrall coming back or Samantha coming back would be, obviously it would be fan service, people would be excited, there would be, I mean, Vanity Fair alone would get 18,000 articles out of that, it would be so exciting, but is that it's already, that's a pretty crowded kitchen. Do we need another cook? I mean, there are a bunch of new characters who already don't really get their due, and that would be unfortunate if, like, Karen Pittman, say, was further pushed to the margins. She was busy with morning shows. I think that I'm told that's why her character, Naya, was not really in much of season two. But, like, you know, I think Lisa Todd Wexley has kind of come in as a different version of Samantha. So has Sarita Chowdhury's character. They're kind of like splitting up Samantha duties in some ways. I just think it would be unfortunate if they got sidelined. So this, you know, old cast member could be brought back in. But, you know, I think that there's obviously been a slight willingness to at least make one appearance. So maybe that's just the little foot in the door that the And Just Like That team needed in terms of convincing Cattrall to come back.
I truly have. I mean, my say isn't necessarily fair because I just sort of watch it gobsmacked. Like, I'm not really paying attention. I'm just like gobsmacked. What's Sarita's character's name again?
Seema.
Yeah, I'm just like, this is biz. She's just. I just see the soulful Saul's like soulful wife on Homeland, who's so layered and, you know, she's like just percolating with emotion, and then on here I'm like, I don't buy this. It's so weird to me. So I don't know. I feel like it. I guess I should retract my answer and say that if that's the case, then yes, I'd prefer to see Samantha, just because it's like, now that's a drag queen.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I you know, I hear you, Elliot. I do love the new characters. I'd be willing to make that sacrifice. And because, yeah, we can't have 9 series regulars that we're dividing all the stories between. A couple of them got to go to make room for her. And to address the listener's question, you know, no, I wouldn't. I don't know that I would buy or want to buy Samantha back on the show and Samantha and Carrie being in a good place while we know the actors aren't in a good place. I want a full healing summit between the actors, everyone on camera and off camera, whoever is part of this fracture. I want a full come to Jesus, and I would like that to be reflected on the show as well. But people, listeners are coming in with some of the wildest and greatest ideas about how to accomplish this. Like, one person was calling for, I mean, a lot of people have been like, just do a Samantha in London episode. She doesn't have to film with any of the other actors. We'll just do sort of that, which would be fun to see. You know, we've talked about I think what you said, Richard, you know, missing the voiceover, we could bring that back. So there's one more listener that I want to bring into the conversation. This was actually an email, but it's sort of connected to what we were talking about. She says, "Hi, Matt, love the pod. My pitch for season 3 of And Just Like That is that Che gets a gig as the second host of Great British Baking Show. They see this as a major step backwards in their career, but are still lacking confidence after the pilot. Also enjoy the possibility of showing a family audience, a non-binary person with this new job. They must, of course, move to London, where they link up with none other than Samantha Jones PR. This brings Cattrall back into the mix with an actor she doesn't have any baggage with, while also removing Che from the main roster without wiping them out completely. Thoughts, Lindsay?" Lindsay, I like it. I do.
Is Che replacing Noel? Like,
good question. That's the thing. I love. I don't want to lose any of those guys. That's tricky.
I don't want to offend Lindsay, but this is why the show, like, why I get so baffled by the show, where I'm like, why, like, I guess doing like stand up and live comedy, I'm like, I don't know I don't know what comedian I would ever parallel Che to, except Andrew Dice Clay. You know what I mean? Like, Andrew Dice Clay. And in what world would Andrew Dice Clay be on a British bake, like it's all so, it's all, everything is just so, like, everything is so, like, loosey goosey, or just, it feels like we're on another planet, where I'm like, I guess Che could be on a British baking show. What couldn't anybody do on this, in this planet, in this universe, you know?
His stepmom used to be in Syosset, I want to say.
Yeah, that's where my grandma lived.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice. I like it.
There.
Yeah. It's,
yeah. It's Long Island.
Yeah. It's just like a very intense group of people in a way that my relatively waspy New England parents are not, you know? And so it's sort of an adjustment, but I don't mind it. It's nice.
My first like serious relationship, my boyfriend was from Texas and was like pretty waspy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to make him sound one way or another, but we were going back to the city from visiting my family on Long Island. And he was like, the way you interact with your family is very unattractive.
Oh, wow. Like, Jesus.
That's mean. And B, like, you just don't like, this is just not your, you just don't get like loud Jews. It's just new for you, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, he was mean.
I grew up in Boston and like most of my friends were Jewish for most of my time there. And like, so I was like sensitive to some of that, but I at one point I was like, Andrew, you and your sister are so mean to your family. And he was like, no, we're not. We're just, you know, no, we're just complete. We're doing our thing. You know, it's just not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was an adjustment.
And you might've just touched on this, but Elliot, with, you know, in terms of the lack of Jewish representation on the show, how did you feel then when Charlotte converted?
Fine. I mean, I thought, you know, it's like, it's, I thought that was a really cute, I thought that was very cute. And I thought it was really cute also, on, and just like that, like, it's just very cute and sweet. And I like it. It feels like a real, like, not just a balance, but like a genuine understanding of the cultural differences, and I guess between like WASPs and Jews, but it's handled in a way that I find to be very sweet and realistic. You know, I mean, it's like cotton candy fluffy, but like, why shouldn't it be, you know, why should it be harder than it than means to be?
Listen, there's one thing I am a little worried they'll try to address in season three of Just Like That, is they attempt to discuss the issues of the real world, and that is the war.
Yeah, like, good luck.
Please don't. Let's let that go by.
I don't think
Charlotte's equipped to jump into that.
There's already too many podcasts to handle. You know, the world of podcasts is already, you know, shaking up the universe of And Just Like That. So,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's just very funny. I guess it is very funny to me. I will say how much Miranda hates the kid. And it's like, it makes sense that she was the one who eventually has a kid, you know, first, but like, she hates that kid. And she hates the kid at the very, in the button of her story, when she pushes the button. It's like, she's such a kid hater. It's pretty, it's amazing. And the kid hits her with a stick in the park. It's like, my God.
Yeah, the kid is a little monster, but
he's a monster. I also think that like, when she accidentally hit the kid with the door at the end of the episode when she, you know, hits him, and it's clearly an accident. Like, it's like an accident. It is. It's an accident, and it sucks. Like, you don't want to hit a kid, but the way that the dad says, the guy is like, just get out, you know, just go. I'm like, oh, fuck off, man. You know, like, it's an accident. He needed to chill out at that point. Like, especially because absolutely. Miranda, of all people, offered to go to the ER with the kid who she's, you know, I'm glad that was a one episode relationship.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. Ultimately the show seems to come down on the side of the child free people.
Yes.
Because the dad is the asshole in the end. But do you see any of yourself in the person who's like in a rush trying to leave the gym? You got to entertain the annoying kid that wants to push the buttons. Like, are you ever a kid hater?
No. I mean, I like kids. And I also, but I've never dated. I mean, I guess I feel like still kind of too young to have dated anybody with a kid, you know, or maybe that's like, I guess more of a gay thing, but no.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I probably should not have hit that old lady's kid with my car. That was a mistake.
So you're firmly in the anti-kid camp with Miranda.
Yes, sure. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, I was cursed by this woman. Anyway, sorry about that. I really apologize. I feel like Justin Theroux, this has never happened to me before.
All the guys say that. Mm-hmm. Richard, any parting thoughts on this episode or the show in general, or, you know, thoughts and prayers for season three of Been Just Like That?
Yeah, I mean, this was Elliot's pick for an episode, and I was like, oh, I don't really remember the title. I was like, oh, is it like one of those early season, like kind of just like just a sex joke for 20 something minutes? I've forgotten that it was this episode, and this episode is so good. It's like the perfect kind of distillation of the show's exploring a sort of a theme, roughly a centralized theme through different plot lines, and Valerie Harper is just so amazing, and I loved seeing a young Murray Enos as the lesbian sister's girlfriend in one scene. So yeah, it was good to revisit. But the problem is, anytime I do this, like revisit an older Sex and the City episode, I'm like, well, god damn it, I'm just gonna have to go back and start season one, episode one, and rewatch the whole series for the 20th time. So thanks a lot.
That's my holiday gift to both of you.
Yeah.
Elliot Glazer, Richard Lawson, thank you both so much, and happy holidays.
To you.
Same
too.
To you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.